Okay, this hour, let's take your phone calls with Lon Milo Duquette about Aleister Crowley and also about the occult. He is an expert on all of this. He's a demonologist. We'll talk with him about that, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. Our final hour with Lon Milo Duquette. Lon, let's talk a little bit about your world as a demonologist yourself. Tell us, how did you get involved in that?
Well, it sort of comes with the territory, actually. Early on in my initiatory career in the OTO, I received a box of books from Helen Parsons Smith. Helen was the widow of Wilford Smith, who led the Agape Lodge OTO in Hollywood from the 1920s up through the 40s, and she was also the widow of Jack Parsons, the famous rocket scientist who Ridley Scott
right.
is making a new movie on, or an AMC miniseries called Strange Angel. Well, we were friends with his wife, Helen, who was the half-sister of Betty Northrop, of course, who was L. Ron Hubbard's wife. It was a very colorful bunch of people. but anyway, she was a small book publisher, and she was one of my initiators into the OTO. She's an old ninth degree member. And she sent me a box of books, and one of them was a book that Crowley had produced called The Goetia, Goetia it's spelled, and that's a book about classic magical grimoire about evoking these 72 specific spirits that we may as well call them demons, because
yeah.
And the book was very strange, very intriguing, and my personal magical teacher said, "No, you're too young and inexperienced to do anything like that."
Which made you want to do it even more,
it
right?
Sure did. And but at the time, I was just getting out of the music business. And I was changing careers, but I didn't have a career to change to. I'd been a musician since I was 14.
Any famous songs out there that we all know?
Well, The Word Is Love went to number one in a few of the U.S. markets. And Johnny Rivers did our song Moving to the Country on... so we had an album and two singles on the Epic Records, which was Columbia. And when I wanted to raise a family and got serious about raising a family, that being a wild and crazy musician in the late 60s was not really good for family life. And I was trying to transition into a normal life. And so we were very, very, very poor while I was trying to get my sea legs. And I thought, well, maybe one of these demons would be a great great thing to have on my side to, help me get a job, help me get a car, help me... And I was young and stupid and everything
yep.
else. My teacher was absolutely...
Should have turned to the light, not a demon.
Well, that's exactly what my teacher said. And my argument was, well, it's really, hard to do that when you're starving to death. And maybe I'd like to get on my feet. But the thing with these spirits is that they're not particularly the dark and evil side. They're just the unbalanced and currently uncontrolled side. So there's not really a moral...
Have you ever been scared, though, Lon,
yes,
as a demonologist?
I was scared. And that's sort of part of the psychology of the magic in doing it. is not overcoming the fear, or not making the fear go away, but to work through that fear. And in a sense, by working through that fear, it changes your own character. It gives you character. It's a character-building experience. In the same way that initiation into a magical society or a fraternal organization, there's always an element of fear involved in it. And that's not to ridicule you or to belittle you. The whole idea is working through that fear strengthens you. And when that is done artfully, like in a well-crafted initiation ceremony, or when you do it to yourself in one of these demonic evocations, it serves to build your character and turn you into the type of person that is more inclined to attract what it is that you're trying to get out of the initiation, if that makes sense.
It does. Let's take some calls here for you. Okay. And then I want to get into more of the occult. East of the Rockies, Seth in B Branch, Arkansas is with us. Go ahead, Seth.
Hey, I was wondering if you guys ever heard of the Order of Non-Angles. I'm not sure if it's a Crowley or a mysticism thing, but
what's it called again?
The Order of Non-Angles? Is that what you said, Seth?
The Order of Nine Angles, I think, right?
O9A is what they call it, for sure.
You know, no, not really.
What's their mission, Seth?
I'm not sure. Really, it's kind of a Scientology, kind of a Satanism, kind of a.
Ever hear of them at all?
No, I don't think so. Somewhere along the line, I seem to recall something that had the words so many angles in its name, but I actually don't know anything about it, or am able to comment one way or the other.
How many secret societies are out there, Lon?
Oh, I would say it'd be a secret, so we'd never really know for sure. But hermetic orders or magical orders, I would say in the neighborhood of two or three score that would be worthy of note. You could probably come up with 40 or 60 that have a presence other than just a website and your girlfriend. There's some wonderful small little lodges that sort of work on the Golden Dawn model.
Mm-hmm.
all over the world, and I've been invited to speak several of those, two of them in Canada, there is so much of the Golden Dawn, magical, quasi-Masonic, hermetic, Martinist type material that's published and readily available that just a few motivated, sincere people can set up and start operating on their own, and many of them do.
Many of them do indeed. One of Crowley's books, was it called The Book of the Law?
Yeah.
But that was his. Some people consider that evil. How come?
Well, it is a very mysterious book that Crowley didn't presume to definitively comment on himself, although he wrote a commentary to it. It was a book that was channeled, and it was one of the first books that Crowley channeled rather than just wrote it himself, and under very colorful and mysterious circumstances in Cairo, Egypt, in 1904. And the reason that that some people would consider it evil is because there's three short chapters, and the third chapter seems the imagery in it is very violent, and is rather blasphemous against the major religions of the last 2,000 years. And so if you when I first read it, I went, oh my God, Crowley really is the devil. Yeah, it really freaked me out. The more you're familiar with it, in the same way as the book of the Revelation of John, the last book of the New Testament, freaks people out too, you know.
Speaking of Johns, let's go to John in California, west of the Rockies. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, Lon. I have a question I've been wanting to ask you for a long time. I know Aleister Crowley, the legacy from Crowley was the OTO, which he didn't create, but he kind of took control of and then rearranged.
Right.
And then the AA, which he created. And then in more modern times, we have some Thelemic orders that alternatively use the Golden Dawn system, but they sort of like Thelemitize it.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you have an opinion about that. If Crowley was alive today, would he frown upon or approve of the Golden Dawn system of initiation within Thelema? Because I know that a previous author, Israel Rigardi, if I remember correctly, was quoted as saying that the two systems are not compatible. So I was wondering how you feel about Thelema within the Golden Dawn system of initiation.
Okay.
And explain what this Thelema is, Lon, for people.
Thelema is Crowley's...
religion?
Yeah, you could call it the religion. You remember what I said about the age changing? And it represents a big change in human consciousness. That the old age had one way of looking at the universe, but the new age has a new kind of more accurate view of the universe. And someday when we evolve a little bit more, we'll have an even better and more accurate view of the universe. Well, those are called magical formulas.
Mm-hmm.
And the Golden Dawn was based on the formula that started when most of mankind believed that the sun actually died at night and teetered toward extinction
and resurrected in the dead morning. Huh?
Exactly right. And it's as far as the observation of nature goes, it's fine because it looks like that. Your whole self identity is more or less based on that, and the Golden Dawn was a very, very beautiful, elegant, and magnificent initiatory society, but it was still based on that old formula. And Crowley's new formula is no, the sun stays on all the time. Okay. And so it doesn't need to be resurrected, okay? Light and darkness is just the earth spinning around. So and that goes on. So we identify with the sun that stays on all the time instead of the sun that dies, okay? And that's a big thing in magic. When you view yourself as a magician who dies and has to magically bring yourself back to life, or a magician who is eternally alive. And so what Rigardi was talking about is that the formula of the OTO, which is one of Aleister Crowley's organizations,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is the AA, those are
they're magical orders, aren't
they? They're magical orders. they're based on this new formula where we identify with the sun that stays on all the time. And but what John is asking about, and it's a very good question, there are organizations that use the wonderful aspects and the elegant and ingenious aspects of the Golden Dawn ritual structure, but they've injected into that structure this new self-identity with the sun, and the fact that the sun doesn't die, and truly we don't die either, and there's no need for this artificial resurrection thing. And so what Rigardi was talking about was not these new organizations that have artfully incorporated the two things together. He was talking about old Golden Dawn style rituals going head to head against new Crowley rituals.
All right, let's go to Josephine in Maple Valley, Washington. Go ahead, Joe. Good to have you with us.
Yes, hi. I hate to be disrespectful, but they said that there's a connection between the Bushes and the Crowleys, and I'm looking at some of the pictures. There's a very strong resemblance to Barbara Bush.
Like related, you mean?
No, that I believe the mother went to do some ritual with him to do.
Oh, that he might be daddy.
That's what I was wondering.
Well, Lon, ever hear of that one?
Yes.
You have?
Oh, yeah, of course. And the story broke. That story broke on April 1st. Of several years ago.
The Crowley was Barbara Bush's father?
Well, you know, I no disrespect to Barbara Bush, but, you know, she does look like that picture of Crowley. People who are familiar with Crowley's life during the period when Barbara Bush's mother and Crowley were in the same city in I believe it was Paris or at the same time, and they did run in the same circles together, the same sort of elegant, sophisticated circle of artists and things. And she was known to be of kind of a frisky, fun person, and Crowley loved frisky.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Wonder how those things start, Lon.
Well,
those stories.
I don't know, but there's a picture of Aleister Crowley that the Beatles put on the Sgt. Pepper album. And if you put Barbara Bush's hairdo on him, I swear they do look.
Oh, boy.
Okay. But no serious Crowley scholar or historian
has pinpointed that.
Has pinpointed that.
All right,
that.
Lon, hold on. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take a final quick break, and then we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you fast night. By the way, on tomorrow's program, Whitley Strieber joins us to talk about what's happening in his life. And, of course, Rich Newman joins me, Ghosts of the Civil War. And welcome back. We are with Lon Milo Duquette. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com through his Facebook account as well, noted author. And one of the books you wrote was called Angels, Demons, and Gods of the New Millennium. In your opinion, Lon, what are angels anyway?
They're strata of consciousness that would, for all intents and purposes, be considered actual beings. But because they're part of the universal consciousness matrix, we've got the same reflection of those exact same, literally, angels. In us, we are a reflection of it. We can't even be separated from. My artificial rabbi that I invented to write the book Chicken Kabbalah says it's all in your head. You just have no idea how big your head is. and I really mean that, each of our heads is infinitely large, and all of this, angels, spirits, demons, all of them are aspects of consciousness. And the more artistic you are, the more imaginative you are, the more these strata of consciousness actually take tangible form as angels and spiritual beings of a classical nature. Incidentally, in my opinion, my best book on Aleister Crowley is called Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth Tarot, and it has just been relaunched in a beautiful new edition, and I've got to toot my horn on.
Oh, good for you!
On that book, because I'm very proud, and I went to New York City to do a launch of that. So I would like to remind everybody to if they're at all interested in finding out more about Aleister Crowley, to look at my book, Understanding Aleister Crowley's Thoth, Thoth Tarot.
How did Aleister die?
He died of natural causes during like an asthma
attack.
He lived in a very nice boarding facility in Netherwood, England, and he died by himself. The landlady said she just heard him walking around. He was probably heading for the mantelpiece to get his medication, and he just fell dead on the floor at 72 years of age, which is for as much as he went through in those 72 years.
That's a pretty good run.
Yes,
for him.
A good run.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, Joe in Long Island. You're on with us, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi, Lon. I was asking you about that movie, Eyes Wide Shut. That was
Kubrick's movie.
Certainly strange, but it seemed to depict the secret society people as being from the upper strata, wealthy. You know, they take limos to the mansion, and you know, they seem to have a lot of means. And then the second movie I'd ask you about is The Devil's Advocate, which when I went to it initially, I thought it was a court case.
With Al Pacino, right.
And then 20 minutes in, this attractive, like Latin-looking female shapeshifts. And I said, well, this is not a court case movie. You know?
Well, I wish I could say I had seen either one of them, but I haven't. But I do know a bit about the wonderful and imaginative scenes from Eyes Wide Shut. And because I get a lot of comments, because people think that's what the OTO is like. And I can only say, dream on.
Well, in that movie, Eyes Wide Shut by Kubrick, which, of course, he died before he finished it, is bizarre.
Yeah.
And the more you watch it, the more you pick up signals and clues about how strange and bizarre those people really are.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to see it eventually, just so I can comment on it. As far as Devil's Advocate,
good movie. That was with Pacino, and I think it was Keanu Reeves as the lawyer, if I'm not mistaken. But Pacino was a lawyer, but I think he was the devil at the same time.
But I do know that more modern movies take a great deal of care within the imaginative circumstances of the plot. They do their best to try to stick in at least a few legitimate elements of modern magic and the techniques and the trappings of legitimate magic. And magic, in my
humble opinion,
and
well, don't want to put words in your mouth.
I've been doing it for a long time. is a whole lot more ordinary, and at the same time, a whole lot more dramatic and frightening than you can possibly imagine, because it deals with the nature of your own inner workings, your own psyche, your own soul. And that is where all the heaven is. That's where all the angels are. That's where all the hell is. That's where all the demons is. And it's your own, and there's nothing in the world more holy, more inspiring, and more terrifying than your own soul.
However black it might be, right?
Yes.
Let's go to Joshua, Springfield, Oregon. Welcome to the show. Hi, Josh. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Josh. Hi,
this is Joshua. I used to go to your Monday classes.
Oh, Joshua, how are you?
Now you know him.
Yes.
Perfect.
So, Lon, what I wanted to ask you was about, I think it was the Key of Solomon, you talked about seeing these five statues, and I want to ask you about basically a fractal that repeats in the Bible about that's basically Yod Heh Shin Vav Heh.
Okay.
So the statue in the middle,
right,
is Sh and Shin. And if you could explain that to these people.
Oh,
yeah, how are you going to do that, Lon?
Well, the circumstance that he's talking about, I was at a Masonic retreat at a very beautiful Masonic facility, and they had four statues of the four temperance and courage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and those are also the same as the four cherubic emblems that you see on the corners of tarot cards, or that in Christian iconography, the four evangelists symbolized by the eagle and the lion and the bull and the angel. And there's a fifth one that holds it all together. The four kind of represent the four classic elements, fire, water, air, and earth. But fire, water, and air, and earth are held together and also kept apart by this mysterious fifth element, which is spirit. And that's the sheen that Joshua was talking about in the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh formula, the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh being the elements and the sheen being spirit. That holds it all together. And the best thing I can do with the time that we have right now is in that story, the statue that represented Sheen was the statue of the goddess that just held her finger against her lips as to say, and the mystery of Sheen is a secret. Or the mystery of Sheen is something that you can't talk about, because even talking about it destroys it.
Yeah. Right. West of the Rockies, Alice is with us in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Alice. Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I had heard that Jimmy Page had purchased Aleister Crowley's personal papers.
Yes.
And so I was wondering, if that's true, are they not available for people to see or to research? And do you know what he's doing with all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Jimmy is a very, very passionate collector of all things Crowley. He actually bought his house in Loch Ness, Scotland, and owned it for a while. It just recently burned down. But
that's poetic, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you know, in the Book of the Law, you mentioned the Book of the Law a little earlier. In the Book of the Law in 1904, it predicted that house would burn down. but that's another story. But yes, and Paige is a very generous and philanthropic supporter of the activities of our organization, the Ordo Templi Orientis, and I think at least some of that material he's made available and has gifted to the organization. And the artwork that he has of Crowley, he's been very generous in allowing us to show it at various art galleries and showings around the world. And so, yes, Crowley's material, the OTO is the executor of his estate and his material, and it is currently available to scholars everywhere, even the material that's at the George Arndt collection at the University of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And the Warburg Institute in London. So if you know what you're looking for, it's available to you. So never in history has Crowley material been so readily available to serious students and scholars.
How scrutinized is it?
Yeah, pretty much so. Pretty much so. And a lot of it is repetitious and things, but and many of the truly important things have been published and are readily available.
Let's go to Robin in Kansas City, Missouri now. Robin, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just wondered if you had ever been in contact with Bob Berdella or perhaps Judge William Creek in Kansas City, Missouri.
Now, what's the name again?
Travels. Judge William Creek or Bob Berdella?
No, I haven't.
They were both of Kansas City, Missouri?
No. Okay. And if it's somebody that I've met and I have gone to dinner with, I apologize for not connecting to the name with the...
Are they still with us, Robin, or have they passed on?
I think that Berdella passed on, and I think Judge Creek has also.
Okay. And the fact that you brought them up, how come?
They both were in contact with Ron L. Hubbard also.
Ah, okay.
So
interesting.
Yes, I've had, besides Helen Smith, who is Betty Northrup's half-sister, I've had no contact with any of the Hubbard people, nor am I anxious to.
A minute to go. What's new? What are you doing next these days?
The next thing is I'm working on a new book. The new Chicken Kabbalah book is finished and will be out soon. I'm also working on another big and magic anthology book. And of course, I'm still playing music. I just did a concert at Cafe Vivaldi in New York.
Oh, good for you. Are you a one-man band?
I'm a one-man band because side men cost money.
Yes, they do. And what do you play, the guitar?
I play the guitar, yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, Lon. Continued success to you, okay?
Thank you very much, George. I really appreciate our time together.
Lon Milo Duquette, as we talk about the life of Aleister Crowley, or if you like the song, it's Crowley and... strange stuff. Anyways, on our next Coast to Coast program, Whitley Strieber will join us talking about his contact with his dearly loved Anne, who has passed on. And then we're going to be talking about interesting ghost stories during the Civil War. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.